Hey, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call KTBAR W2TTT. That's the right answer to that question. In case anyone's wondering, we actually like it that way. Hoping that nobody has any significant issues to resolve. Alrighty. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs a technical net on 146.955, the 2-meter repeater. Frequency, but the PL is 141.3 if you need tone access, which you do. Who might know even further, you need an offset of, irrespective of whether you're a member of VARA or whether or not you're even have a... So, anyway, hopefully you will check in. And let me mute that. We don't need that. Stand by. There we go. I see we have Nestor, KD2AK... Wait, I muted this. There we go. I see we have Nestor, KD2AKP, in here. Text message window, if you'd like, at your convenience. Good evening to you. Kind of curious where you're checking in from today. And let's take you first, actually, KD2AKP. K2BARW2TTT. Maybe Nestor had to step away from his computer. Alrighty. Nope. L link, and we hope that this is a little different. As I said, we're looking for a conversation. So a both or none of the others. So anyway. Let us Whiskey 2s tonight. Stations whose call signs begin with Whiskey 2. Please call.
W2JEK Don. And not just a comment, but I advise you that your signal is cutting in and out. Over.
My signal's cutting in and out. Huh. Alright, I'll have to keep a finger on that microphone. Is this better, Doc?
Yeah, I guess so. It seems to be, but I'll watch it and see. Back to that.
Okay, was there another station underneath?
Your K2EIR. You were being jammed, Gordon.
Oh, that kind of in and out. Gotcha. Okay, not a problem. About to say, I mean, every so often I know when my mobile ray guy... I've been known to have an issue like that, but is it not keeping the thumb down? But I figured that okay. And let's quickly just take a sidebar. K2EIR, Howie, will you be making questions or comments tonight?
Actually, I wanted to mail, but when this happened, I chirped in. I'm on my handy talkie, K2EIR.
Okay. Very good. Let's see. All right.
W2CH, Ray and White Plains, none of the above.
W2JC, Jim, none of the above. All right. Someone's transmitting on top of you several times.
Yes, I noted that. Encourage people who, in the Paramus and West area heading out the Route 4 corridor to... Listen. you out that way. Alrighty. Any other whiskey twos?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Okay, very good. Welcome aboard, Charlie. Any other whiskey twos? Okay, well, K2EIR is in here, Howie. Any other kilo twos?
KC2NKU, Maryland and White Plains, no questions, no comments, but I'm coming home with my hip. Thanks for asking.
Yep, I did ask. You knew I was going to ask again. Good to hear it, Marilyn. Alrighty. Any other kilos? Okay. We'll handle that then. How about the ever popular Novembers?
This is N2EO. One comment, one question.
Thank you, Noel. Any other Novembers?
K2AMI, Tony, with a comment about Fox Hunt and Cub Uncommon meeting coming up on Sunday.
Gotcha, Tony. Gotcha, gotcha. All right. Any other November station? November 1 ending in uniform. I need the other two letters, please. Go ahead. You're dropping out a little bit. Was that Romeo Echo uniform? W2TangoTangoTango@ARRL.net, or you can send me a you can send me a text message on EchoLink, or check in via EchoLink at K2FoxtrotJuliet-L, K2FoxtrotJuliet-L. But very good. We're going to look you up and figure out where you are in a minute. But the conditions are just a hair marginal. Any other stations checking into the TechNet tonight? All right, well, let's get to it. K2AMI, your comments, sir. K2BAR, W2TTT.
Hey, it's K2AMI, and just a general broadcast that this coming Sunday, Barra will be holding its fox hunt, its spring fox hunt. And you can start gathering up at the Westwood High School at about noontime, 12 o'clock on Sunday. And with a bit of luck, by 1 o'clock, the teams will go out on the field and attempt to locate the fox. Charlie and Denver are the fox team this year. And the fox hunt will continue for about 2 hours to about 3 o'clock. And then we will attempt to find the pizza parlor after that. Hi. Then later on Sunday at 7:30 is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association monthly meeting. This month, I understand that there will be a demonstration and a quick, no-nonsense type education as to how to program in calls into N1MM. Not a complete analysis of the program with all the details, but just how to enter calls and log on N1MM. Then the second half of the meeting will be a show-and-tell, much to my surprise. You have equipment that you've purchased or bought or built at Kidnight, please bring it in and demonstrate it at the show-and-tell on Sunday after the N1MM instruction meeting. You might spread the word on the show-and-tell because there hasn't been too much publicity on it, and I hope it'll be mentioned in the current Barra Bulletin when it comes out. Back to Ned.
That's great. The show-and-tell nights are a lot of fun, so I encourage people to participate in that. And Jim Joyce pointed out something really smart, too. He said to bring your, he's going to bring his laptop with N1MM already, you know, filled in and configured. And then he's going to, you know, follow along and get and just run a little test during the demonstration on Sunday night. I think that's a wise decision. So if you do have a laptop, load up N1MM and bring it along. I think it'll be a wise decision to do. A little hands-on on your own computer is a good thing. So anyway, are there any stations with comments on what Tony's pointed out with the box on for the meeting?
Yeah.
Station again?
Alpha Charlie 2, Golf India, Rich, it's a late check-in, and my question is, do we need to bring a broadband connection to the meeting?
You don't need to. If you've already downloaded and installed the program, following the prompts as you do it, the rest can be resolved once you're there.
Thank you.
We got AC2GI. Fancy meeting you here. I'm trying to remember if we've ever met, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't recognize the call sign. But you're Rich, are you?
Kilo Charlie 2, that's the Romeo X-ray.
But KCYFB, and we've met at one of the Bauer meetings and also at the Sussex Hamfest last year. Over.
Gotcha. Very good, Rich. Gotcha, gotcha. And KC2RX just showed up.
Yeah, K2BAR. I'm mobile headed home out of Mawa. Just checking in there. Or
hey, Robert. Very good. Good hearing you. Glad we got that all squared away. For those who care, at the end of the second, it's 2-2. Devils and Philadelphia. Anyway. Alrighty. Pardon me. Any other stations wishing to comment about or have questions about Tony's announcements of the Fox Hunt on Sunday morning or the Barra meeting on Sunday night? Tony, you want to add anything?
But then there will be several teams there with equipment, and if you do not have equipment, you can probably join one of the teams. So don't, if you have never experienced a fox hunt and want to get involved with one, don't feel embarrassed about not having the equipment. Just show up and team up with somebody who does have the equipment. You should be traveling all in one car, and often a car can handle as many as four people with equipment. So please come if you have any interest, and if you have the equipment, it's even better.
Okay, very good. Any other check-ins for the net? Well, thank you, Tony. That's very good. Alrighty, our next topic or comment and question comes from N2OEL. Noel, go for it. K2BARW2TTT.
Okay, first the comment. As everybody usually knows, in most computers there's a backup battery that holds the boot sequence or whatever. Anyways, it's usually a 2032, and nowadays there's a holder for it. Well, a lot of radios have that. My TS-50s have a 2036. So it turns out you can go on the internet on eBay, buy a little holder for less than a dollar shipped, put that in your radio, instead of having a very expensive battery that's wrapped in plastic that costs $10 or $15 that has to be soldered in. You solder in this little holder once, and from then on, you just flip out the battery, flip in the new, you're all fine. Back to network.
That's a good idea, so you can streamline the replacement process going forward by doing that.
Next question, which has got a part A and B. Part A is behind me hanging up is a whole bunch of jumpers of uncertain heritage or provenance, provenance, whatever that word is. Anyways, they're PL-259s. Some of them look like they're genuine silver on the end. Some of them say RadioShack, a couple of them. RG8X, most of them are the RG8. How do I know if they're actually good for RF? Is there any way? That's part A. Part B is my understanding that every time you use an adapter, there's a certain amount of loss. So is there really a lot of loss? For instance, if I take and have a type N connector on the radio, switch it with an adapter to PL-259, and then at the other end, switch it back to a type N. Is there any great amount of loss? So that's the two-part question.
Okay, I guess it depends on what you're adapting. In this case, you're taking a radio that expects a really good high, constant impedance interface, such as what we found on an N connector, and you're introducing a conversion to what would arguably be the most misnamed connector in the universe, called the UHF connector. So yeah, I mean, if you really don't want losses, I would avoid doing that, if possible. Having said that, if, you know, it's a 50-watt FM rig, and, you know, it's not a repeater or something, where you have to worry about leakage and such, then what the heck? But you have to know when to get overzealous and when it's not accepted, you know, when it's not being overzealous but being prudent.
Okay, how do I test out my jumpers?
Well, there's a good question. Okay, so what I do to test jumpers is I have a known good source. Actually, these days I do it two different ways. I actually just simply put a known dummy load at the end of the jumper, and I plug it into my antenna analyzer.
Okay, but say I have a 3-foot jumper. Am I really going to see? I have a really decent dummy load that I have here with a UHF connector on the end of it that was purchased at the recent bear auction. And I have a MFJ-259 antenna analyzer. Can I really tell whether a 3-foot jumper has a little bit of loss, medium amount of loss, lots of loss? I mean, how would you tell?
Well, a couple of different ways. You can, pardon me, you can measure the power if you have two very, very well set up power meters. You can measure the power going into the cable, measure the power coming back, or coming out of the cable into the dummy load. A 3-foot jumper is kind of hard to measure, but the connectors will certainly play a part in that as well. You could certainly use a TDR, and you can use the functionality of the of an antenna analyzer to do that too. See if there's any untoward impedance. So the way you would do that is you would measure. If you have the antenna analyzer, you plug your dummy load directly into the antenna analyzer, and then you would plug it directly into the antenna analyzer through your jumper and compare the readings of the two.
Would it help if I daisy chained the, you know, six of those jumpers together? Or would the connectors introduce too much error to that?
You want to control for errors, so yeah, I wouldn't do that. I mean, you want to control for your variables. I mean, you know, like science projects, you know, if you have, you know, known things, change one variable and see what happens, you know.
Okay. Next time I go to kids' night, I'll bring some toys and try it out.
I mean, it's a great idea. It's an absolutely wonderful idea, actually. Okay, anybody else have comments on this?
Who am I?
Okay, Tony.
The modern-day antenna analyzer that Noel has does read capacitance and inductance, as well as total impedance in the circuit. And if you could rig it up, you could compare capacitance between between different jumpers to see if any one of them is more than the other. But I would assume, I've never done this, but I would assume that any length of coaxial line will reveal some type of capacity and some type of inductance. So viewing it from that point of view might be a way of testing it. So, but again, you'd have to terminate it into you can compare it, terminate it into a dummy load, and also try it into an open circuit and see what it does. It might be able to give you a reference that you can compare other leads to. You test it both ways and see if you get any wide variation on one jumper more than the other. Do you think that would work, Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, what's nice about these, at least, you know, my antenna analyzer, and it's nothing spectacular, it's just a better MFJ one, when you get the impedance, you also get the capacitive and inductive components, and resistive components, actually, too. So, your advice is outstanding. It really, really is. I think that makes great sense to do that. Kind of see what else other people have in mind. There are some other ways of doing it too. You can just spot check it at frequencies that are of interest to you. I mean, keep in mind that if you check, you know, the SWR of the dummy load directly coupled to your antenna analyzer at 400 megahertz, you know, and then you introduce the cable and compare, then, you know, that's a very useful measurement to make and very helpful, to say the least. Discount the differences between the two measurements. Actually, you count the differences between the two measurements, and that's what the cable introduced. So, Mr. Noel, anything else?
Oh, that's it. And to all y'all.
Molly Gazzali, all these check-ins. And I have other stuff, too. Alrighty. The other day, Howie, K2EIR, and I were having a conversation, and in all honesty, I have not had a chance to follow up on what he graciously sent me. But what we were discussing was a way to make a shorter antenna for portable operation. And his goal was to kind of break something down. Basically what he suggested was that you take a piece of, you know, ladder line and run a wire in the middle. And what you do is you run the wire out, short it at the far end, come back, and then short the extra wire to the end of the second lead, and then go back out again. And that way you can have a, you know, a, an 80-meter dipole. That's about 20 foot on each leg, and it'll work pretty well. In fact, you could even cut that in half and make a 40-meter dipole if you wanted to. But it's a way to linearly load an antenna and go for it. So, anyway, that's what I have in mind for that. I have not read on the subject, but what we started talking about more was, well, if you could do that, then why not make yourself, if you've got like a 25 to 30 foot boom, why not make yourself a 2-element 40-meter linearly loaded Yagi? So therein lies the opportunity there. Any thoughts on that?
K2EIR.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll supplement. The other thing I sent you, and first of all, let me give credit where credit is due. I don't steal. I try not to steal. The article on which this 40-meter shortened dipole is based was written by K4VX, Kilowatt 4 Victor X-ray, and appeared in the 2002 July QST. But what I also sent Gordon was the QRZ lookup for K1KLO, Kilo Lemur Oscar, Andy Pfeiffer, who, and in that QRZ listing, he lists a lot of his publications in QST over the years. And I also sent Gordon a manuscript that Andy wrote on the Pfeiffer quad. And what he had was, some of you may remember if you saw QST, is he had a 2-element 40-meter beam, and each end of the boom had something that looked like a circle, a wheel, a windmill, and basically each one of those was a linear-loaded element. And as you read Andy's stuff, he says it actually takes more wire, but he used something called a double Maltese cross to reduce the amount of space it took up, so that I think he was down to about 20% of the space that a full-size quad would take. And he had even better performance or similar performance to a quad. I say better because he said it could be close to the ground compared to a quad and still perform very well. So I hope that fills out what you said, Gordon. I don't even think you need a 25-foot boom for that. I think his boom was a lot shorter, maybe half the size, maybe 20 feet. So there are other things to consider, but once again, with linear loading, you should be able to get a very well-performing antenna that takes up a lot less space. And so I recommend looking at it. You could judge for yourself, read it, and if you're really daring, of course, try it. back to net control, this is K2EIR.
Yep, well, I am really daring. I just need time, so maybe after this weekend we'll have some time to do that. Very good. That's pretty exciting, to say the least. Anyway. Does anybody have any comments on such critters as we were discussing? Howie's generous topical suggestion here in the email conversation we had earlier in the week is bearing some fruit. Alrighty. Well, that's very good. Okay. With that happy note, let's see. Where do we go from here? Howie, do you want to add any more to that?
This is K2EIR. Yes, I know there's a guy named Skip, and I can't remember his last name, and I don't quite remember his call. It may be something like W1VW, I'm unsure. But Skip is the inventor of the fractile antenna, and he's posted a couple of times to QST. He has a company, and most of his fractile antennas have been at very, very high frequencies used in cell phones and the like. But he made a statement on Q-Words a while back that I happened to catch about having a wire antenna that was made of some material that used fractiles, and so it was much more potent, shall we say. I don't know if it was shortened or gave more gain or whatever than other antennas. So he's being a bit secretive about this. There's a lot of mathematics involved in fractile antennas, and he wrote the book on that. But if anyone knows anything about fractile antennas or how this stuff is going, I certainly would like to hear about it. I will mention, as long as I brought it up, and so we don't starve people for info, is that there is an article, and Skip helped contribute to it, about a 10-meter fractile antenna, and it appeared in 73 magazine, and all of the 73 magazines are somewhere online and freely available. It was mentioned in the Solar Report by Tad Cook in QST a couple of months ago, that where these archives are. So if you're interested, do some research, and you might be able to find the article on a 10-meter fractile beam, so you can see what it's like. But it doesn't give anything on the theory or, you know, how to design something for another band. K2EIR.
2OEO?
Go ahead, Noel.
I got him on 5 discs, and currently Jim Joyce has the 5 discs, unless he put them in his garage.
What do you have on 5 disc?
All of the issues of 73 magazine.
Oh, really? That's very nice of you. Did you buy them, or what did you do?
There was some problem with them online, and there were some issues that were bad, and somebody on one of the groups said, hey, you send me a couple bucks for the copies, I'll send them to you. And I don't remember, I sent him $4, I think, and he sent me 5 CDs. I put them onto my hard drive on a computer in the other room, and then I lent Jim Joyce the 5 discs.
Well, on Sunday, if he can bring the discs, I will copy them onto my computer during the meeting and let you go home with them.
Send him an email right now.
Okay. That's great. Now, I'm looking for someone named Skip here. I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing a guy named Nathan Cohen at Fractal Antenna Systems in Waltham. Maybe that's him. Maybe he's called Skip.
That's him.
Okay. I was going to go look up his name in yours. That's, yeah. Yeah, Fractal Antenna Systems has a very interesting website. It's called Fractenna, F-R, devils are up 3-2, by the way, FRACTENNA.com, Fractenna. .com. Interesting stuff. There's all sorts of science behind it, and as you said, arithmetic, mathematics, and you'll see several other things. There's a design of reconfigurable fractal antennas for space and other things like that.
K2BAR, KT2OR.
Robert, go ahead.
Hey, I'm home. I will catch up with you Sunday night at the meeting. I'd like to talk to you about some things.
Hey, no problem, Robert. Look forward to seeing you. And I'll get there eventually. Save me a spot. Jeremy's got an afternoon game on Sunday, but I think we'll be fine. James has to work, so we're going to be down in a car unless John wants to facilitate James getting to work or something, so he can have the car. But anyway, all good. All right. Anybody else have more on the subject? Okay, well, just so everybody understands what we're talking about here, we're talking about an antenna that
has odd geometry, and that's the best way to describe it. And the odd geometry allows for, you know, the edges of facets, as well as the facets, to be part of the equation for impedance matching and also for resonance and also for directionality. So it's very, very interesting as to how that all works. And we'll see how it will continue to be useful in amateur radio. But I'd be very curious if anyone has done any work with them at all or read about them. Maybe Howie, you've read some a little bit, over.
I'm afraid I've told you all I know. I wish I knew more, but of course it takes time, and I'm kind of limited in that. I've spilled my guts, so to speak. I've emptied my head of the knowledge I have. You have some written material. You can get more on the linear loading stuff, but it's there for everybody to look at. I think it's very intriguing and promising, and I don't think it's, you know, you may think it's out in left field, but I don't really think so. I think, for example, fractile antennas may be the future. That is not enough publicly disclosed to be critical about it, you know. But the linear loading stuff is, and, you know, I think there's something there. You know, again, I'm excited about it, and I'm interested in discussing it with anyone, and I'm interested in learning. I'd like somebody to educate me about fractals. So that's all I have, K2EIR.
Yeah, well, if you click on the commercial solutions link, you'll see a variety of geometries, and they'll certainly get your attention. And then he's got a bunch of product fact sheets for various things on the left side, so you can download examples of what these things look like. And I think it's well worth it. I think you'll find it interesting. So, pardon me. It's been a long, long day. I figure that would be a good start for you.
Hey, well, there's no computer here in the room with the rig, so it'll have to be another time. But thank you, K2EIR.
All right, Howie, very good. Just trying to see here if there's anybody on EchoLink that wants to add in their 2 cents. Let me just check the EchoLink panel. Nestor, I got your none of the above, so just Nestor. Alrighty. Anybody else have thoughts on the subject? Or any subject that they'd like to raise?
Yeah, that's 2K.
Jim, welcome aboard. Glad you left. What's your interest this fine evening? Questions, comments, confusions?
No, I just wanted to say I'm on my way back from Rachel's extra class, the first session, and so far went very well. But I kind of have a weird question. If one were not particularly space constrained, looking for ideas for antennas, for not space constrained, because I've never had to think that way before.
Oh, are you thinking in anticipation of a southwestern United States QTH with some roof?
Oh, that's the one.
Okay, maybe we want to hear about that. Well, okay, so the first thing we'd have to know more about is the soil and also your height, your available height, because constraints of, you know, laterally are eased, but what about vertically? And, you know, what do you consider appropriate? The other question is terrain. I'm kind of curious about that. Because there are lots of stations with all sorts of good, shall we say, propagation opportunities that are thwarted because you got this rock and that rock in your face. So tell us a little bit about, more about the environment.
Okay. The soil, it's, I don't know, it's this goofy clay stuff. I don't know for sure, but I suspect it's probably pretty lossy. It's relatively flat. There's a very gentle slope up to the east for a couple of miles, down to the west and south and somewhat to the north for 2 or 3 miles. Anyway, you get outside that perimeter, you start to find a rise. The general elevation of that area is about 4,900 feet. In some places there are peaks as high as 7,000 feet, but they're several miles away. The lot is approximately 600 and some odd feet square. It's quite square. Virtually no obstructions. There is a metal, looks like a welded metal fence that goes all the way around it. Hate to think how much somebody paid for that, but anyway, it's this great long fence around the perimeter. On the property itself, there is not a whole lot spatial-wise. In the northeast corner is where the house and barns and so on are located. Hang on. So, yeah, the property is relatively unobstructed. Across the street there's a neighbor, and behind me there is a neighbor, but he's at the far end of his 600 square foot square lot. On either side there are no neighbors, so no problem that way. Anyway, back to that. Dennis,
okay. Okay, and your bands of operation are?
Oh, I'm greedy.
Okay, well, if you're going to be greedy, I'm going to assume everything from 160 on. So let's talk about that. So the low-frequency bands, your biggest problem is going to be ground plane issues and getting a good ground. So there are a couple of ways to handle that, and lower it down 3-3. Devils are going to make it hard on themselves. All right, so let's see. What you might want to do is create yourself a ground screen for verticals you might have, long monitoring antennas would be excellent. You know, you have the opportunity here to have beverages, and by gosh, I would. Even to the point of, you know, originating them elsewhere and bringing them back to the house on coax. Maybe you put a preamp out in the boonies and stuff like that. Having said that, if you have beverage antennas for the low bands, you're going to need to handle these matters carefully, because there's going to be a lot of electricity on them at times, and so you're going to need to disconnect them to make sure they don't go anywhere. But a switchable, for the low bands on receive in particular, a switchable, beverage array sounds lovely, complemented by a horizontal loop at as high as you can get it, and of course a vertical with the extensive ground plane underneath it.
Yeah, I was thinking in terms of putting up, say, a stepper or something closer to the house, and then perhaps another 160-meter loop, and then some other, perhaps, beverage. Anyway, if you, some odds and ends. It'll obviously subject to evolution over time, and funding, and whatever height limitations I find myself imposed under, anyway, there are theoretical limitations, but I'm being told that that probably won't be a problem, probably more of a matter of a cost and so on.
Okay. I mean, I was only addressing 40, 80, and 160. I wasn't even trying to do anything on it with a stepper. VHF bands, that's fine. You know, the high frequency bands, and that would be, you know, really good to have a stepper. My general advice is put the biggest thing up there you can get your hands on and afford at the height that you want to be most effective. And then if you, you know, find yourself later liking something else, you can always throw a tri-bander or a five-bander underneath it at a lower height to have your choice of antennas and put it on a tick ring or something. Or just maybe on a shorter tower and be done with it.
Yeah, one of my neighbors about a mile away has apparently several towers up, and he's subject to the same CCNRs that I am, so he did not seem to have a problem with that. And there are some other much taller devices up, windmills and such, and I know from the guy who put one of the windmills in the same area, he had no difficulty getting a construction permit for it. In any case, we'll see. But I was thinking in terms of, you know, ideally, I don't know, like an 80-foot crank-up, as there are periods when the wind can be kind of fearsome. So I would like to be able to drop the thing my way rather than under wind. Anyway, you know what I mean, NS2K.
Well, yeah, if you can, oh my lord, if you can, you know, get the antenna down so that you can do all your antenna maintenance without having to do anything elaborate, that's also a good thing. Keep that in mind. As we get older, not having to climb a tower to get antennas squared away is a nice thing. It really is. So, do consider that as part of your equation. I would like a 6-meter beam, a really, really big one. And I would like that independent of anything that's going on other bands other than maybe 10 meters.
Yeah, okay. Obviously, a routine 6, probably 3-element 6, is part of the stepper plan. But be nice to have something with, higher gain, more directional, as a separate issue. That might be on a separate stick, who knows, have to see. Anyway, all kinds of possibilities. Just need to get my thinking pointed in that direction.
Yeah, I think that would make for fun. I mean, what I like is a lot of autonomous radio, so I can listen on 40, operate 40 or 20, whatever I'm doing, and also have something dedicated on 6 that's serious. Or if I'm on 40, maybe I will listen on 10 or and 6, or maybe 20 and 6, or doing some DXing while also rag-tuning, that kind of thing. So that's kind of where I was heading with that. All right, anybody else have thoughts and comments as we live in our land of 40, 50, and 60 by 100? I think that's true for most of us, if we're so lucky as to even have that much. Anybody have any thoughts?
Hey, BIR.
Howie, go ahead.
I can imagine this and trying to, again, my own limitations of experience and theory and knowledge, but I think that one of the things I would consider would be phase verticals. You know, you up in the air, I don't know how many elements you could put up, 5 or more on HF, but vertically, if you have 600 feet, you probably could put up quite a few verticals. And you could, if you really want to, you know, dedicate your land to it, you could probably have them in a couple of different directions so that you could almost have a grid of them, and with various phasing, choose your directionality. And they could cover many different bands frequently. You can do that, although it might be a compromise on some of them compared to the design band. And I'm also thinking that from what we now know, you don't have to lay thousands of wires on the ground or under the ground. If you have elevated radials, you can get by with 8 to 16. You know, again, if you're going to be multi-band, you may want more with different lengths. But that's what I imagine, having a multi-element vertical array that I can change the phasing on so that I can change the directivity, especially if I was interested in DX. I think that might be what I'd want. Just an idea from K2EIR.
Yeah, well, I think your point's well taken, Howie. Elevated verticals are absolutely wonderful. They don't have to be elevated very much, which is another thing people don't realize. You can basically elevate them enough so that they're not a nuisance and not have to go crazy. So, you know, 10-foot poles is huge. That's absolutely fine. They don't have to be anything fancy. Probably get something that is reasonably tolerant of the what ultimately will be fairly dry weather, as long as it can be stayed, you know, can handle the winds and things like that. I'm just kind of curious, Jim, in your area with verticals, I mean, you would need, for every vertical, you would need a ground plane array. So, to me, that's a lot of work. So I was thinking that you would have a horizontal loop, a vertical, and a bunch of beverages to handle the low bands, you know, the 160, 40, 80, 40 kind of thing. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know that a vertical, a full-size vertical with a good ground plane is pretty darn effective. But, you know, anyway, it does require a lot of effort, and I want to try to avoid having something that would be damaged by, I'll say, large four-footed creatures. But obviously up well above head height would not be a problem, or sufficiently buried wouldn't be a problem, but close to ground, at least in a lot of it, could potentially be a problem. In any case, loop. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I for chuckles, had drawn a couple of 160 meter lines. Not that you'd build an antenna necessarily. You'd probably do a couple of half wavelengths, so it'd be 80 meters. Anyway, but at 80 meters, I could probably put in two or three elements. a couple of parasitic, anyway. But, and I suppose you could probably at that point, put up, say, three elements. You know, one is tuned to the top end of the band, another, you know, farther down the band, and use them, as if they were a Yagi. That would be an interesting implementation. And I could do those in a couple of axes if I wanted.
Yeah, I think that would be great. That would be absolutely wonderful, to say the least. All right. Anybody else find anything interesting and attractive?
Please,
I heard Jim, and I think there's another station in there as well. Who is the other station?
N2OER. I found the article.
Okay, stand by. Okay, W2JC first.
How about a rhombic on a rotatable platform? Okay.
Something. You have to think about that.
Well, give us a band, Jim, for an example.
Well, rhombics work well on any band, but with all that space, you could set up a rhombic on 160 pointed to South America.
Yeah, you certainly could. Or Europe, or wherever. That would certainly be attractive. Ah, dear me. Okay. I'm trying to figure out how you'd rotate it, though.
If you had enough wind, you'd just put up a bunch of rhombics.
And what you could do is switch in and switch out shorting bars in lieu of the far end load, so you could conceivably select where your termination is. Pardon me, it's a far end of the loop. I think you can get away with, well, I don't know, can you get away with feeding a rhombic from the side, or must you feed it from the opposite end from its termination?
WQJCast, thinking of W6AM in California, I think he had rhombics covering every direction, and I think they have to feed them at the end, because the termination has to be at the other end. Anything's possible, but I think the getting the phasing and all is why you have to do it at the end, rather than on the side.
Okay, that's good to know. Who else?
The archive is 16.8 gigabytes, so I had to feed 4 DVDs. Since I have the archive here in front of me, and I got some DVD plus Rs, do you have any objection to DVD plus Rs?
Oh, unless you want to tell me where I can just... Yeah, that's fine. That'd be absolutely fine. If it's under 16 gig or 15 and a half gig, I can probably just bring a thumb drive and copy them onto the thumb drive and be done with it. Thank you, Noel. I will do that, and I'll pass them around as you see fit. That'll be perfect. That would be an excellent library to have. Alrighty. Noel, you had some comments about other things, I thought. Do you have something else you want to say? And be advised, the Flyers and the Devils are going into overtime, which will start in about 20 minutes. Alrighty, well, so Jim, I think we've kind of answered your question, but boy, congratulations on your new QTH.
Well, I'm not quite there yet, but we're working on it. It's in process, but we'll know in another month or so. At this point, everything is going well. Obviously, there's a lot that needs to get wrapped up here, and I still have a job here, so anyway, at least for the time being, we'll see what happens. In any case, I thank everyone for the suggestions, some good thoughts, some directions to go in here and try to lay stuff out. But, a lot of work to be done here, a lot of work to be done out there. The house is very sound. It's somewhat dated, but it's fine. We can work with that. Anyway, I thank everyone, and give it back to Ned here, NS2K.
Hey, just one other comment for you. Just make sure that the other folks are not grandfathered against either CCRs or other, legal or regulatory incursions that have come up since their establishment, Last thing you want is to find out that what's good for the goose is not good for the other goose, where you're the other goose.
Oh, yeah, I understand the problem.
Okie dokie. Very good. That sounds excellent. I'm glad Rachel's first class went off well. How many students does she have?
Ooh, I'm not sure. It was around 10, thereabouts.
Hey, excellent. And I'm hoping some of them were the people that were all hot to trot a couple of weeks back. Alrighty. They also have the answer to Stuart's question, but Stuart's not here tonight. Stuart wanted to know how to deal with the firewall on Verizon Fios router, and I have that answer, but we'll save that for another night. Anybody else have any questions, comments, confusions, excitements for the net?
If I wanted to send you the article, and it's 4 pages out of a big 20 meg PDF file, which is too big to email, how would I break out 4 pages from PDF?
Let's see. What you can do is you can copy them and you highlight the text of those pages. Highlight those pages and hit copy. Copy with formatting. Paste it into something else and away you go. Paste it into like a Word document or something. Just paste the contents in there. Does that make sense, Mr. Noel?
I have everything highlighted. Now I'm going to try to copy it.
Alrighty. Oh, man, oh, man. Can't believe it's 10 o'clock and I'm this tired already. I got stuff to do, so that's amazing. Alrighty. Anything else from anybody else while we're waiting for Mr. Noel?
K2EIR.
Howie.
Yeah, he might be able to select print, and then when it shows and asks what pages to print, he could choose those 4 pages to print, and then it depends what software he has and what he's capable of. But even in the worst case, if he's able to print those 4 pages to a laser printer or something, and he has a scanner and can scan to PDF, I mean, that's crude, but he could do it that way, you know, produce 4 pages off the printer, then put them into the scanner and create a new PDF that's only 4 pages long, and then email it to you.
Great idea, Howie. Good, good. Anybody else? Okay, well, that's fine, fine, fine. I'm good here. Anything else anybody wants to talk about?
W2JC, I have a little brag.
Brag away.
Uh-huh. I haven't copied CW very much in 20 years. I put on this W1AW code practice last night and amazed myself to be copying most of the 35 in my head and all of the 30. So I was really surprised at that. Over.
Oh my God. Now you're showing off.
What can I say? I'm not sure I could scribble it down on paper, but it was going through. So it's amazing what the brain remembers for a long time.
Yeah, isn't that kind of neat? It really is to me, anyway, when I hear things like that. That's outstanding. Well, good for you. That's absolutely a wonderful thing when you see stuff like that, how well that it all adds up. Anyway, I don't think I have any more at this point unless somebody else does. Alrighty. Just noticing that the LA Kings arena has a plaza, like an outdoor food court kind of area, on one of the subroofs of the arena. That's pretty cool. Anyway, just saw that little video shot. Alrighty, well, we're going to wish everybody a good night then, and thank you for your participation. It's been a very interesting night tonight, and look forward to working you guys on other frequencies and modes, and hopefully we'll see some folks at the VARA meeting on Sunday night at the probably in the Westwood, probably the Washington Township, municipal building. We gather about 7 o'clock, and then the meeting starts around 7:30. And make sure you bring your laptop with N1MM loaded already if you can. And also bring stuff that you've built. Show it off. Another show off. Jim, of course, is going to sit there with a recorded piece of code at 30 words a minute and tell you what it says in real time as it's coming by. That's what he's going to show off. Hi, hi. All right, 7-3 all, and have a great night. This is KQBAR, WN2TTT, off and clear, 7-3.
Uh-huh, I can't copy and talk at the same time. That's the only catch. I just opened up an Adobe Reader, Acrobat Reader, 9 or 10. And you can copy, select the text that you want and print it into WordPad or Notepad, and it retains the formatting fairly well. And then that could be saved just as a regular file and sent. Or?
That's pretty much what I was telling him to do, is select the pages you want and, copy with formatting and paste with formatting and go from there. That works out very, very well, as you pointed out, Jim. Alrighty. I think I'm going to get myself a nice cold beverage. And then, get back to my paperwork, which is just lovely. The Devils did not disappoint. They've been playing well. They just have a 3-3 tie going into overtime. So hopefully they will win, be up 2-1 in the series. That would be lovely.
Oh, TTT. None of my options are copy with formatting. It's copy, control, C, and that's it.
That's fine. Copy is good, and when you go to paste it into a Word document, it'll ask you if you want to paste it with formatting.
Oh, you can read it, but it loses all formatting, and it loses the important pictures.
Well, try what Jim said to print it to a file.
Gordon, I have a quick question I forgot to ask. See, do you know if N1MM runs on Win98?
I don't know. I would almost think not.
Well, I guess by Sunday night, I'll be able to answer it. I have a laptop that the drive crashed, and I bought a new drive, but of course the drive is blank. And I don't have any Windows operating systems that don't call home anymore and say, hey, man, you're using it on two different machines, and you can't do that because Bill Gates wants to get rich. The only one I have is 98. So I'm going to load up 98 on it and see if it works. Sorry.
First thing, I think you should load a copy of 90 of XP and not worry about it.
I don't have an installed disk of XP. All I have is the ones that come with the laptop, which are supposedly specific for that machine code.
Oh, I see. Wow. You've really managed to box yourself in a bit, haven't you? All right, well. And I guess you don't have a Windows 7 that will run on, well, Windows 7 would be probably a real exercise on a machine that old.
Well, I have a Win 7 that came with my latest desktop. But again, it's supposedly registered, for that machine. I don't want to end up having Microsoft disable everything I have with that serial number.
No, of course not. I mean, I have enough old XPs for machines I no longer have, they're all committed, but I never worried when I replaced one machine with another and no longer maintained the old operating system image on the old machine, because the machine was basically a turkey at that point, or a planter. I didn't worry about it, so that's kind of cool. But let's see. You don't even have a XP upgrade disk?
Nope,
not that I could find. I don't think so. I tried putting Linux on this thing, but Linux and I don't get along that well. Doesn't seem to do very much of anything. Yeah, the old operating systems weren't nearly as fussy as the new ones call home and have that anti-theft or whatever you call it to see if you're trying to get by the registration.
No, I understand. At some level, I don't mind that. But, on the other hand, there's nothing wrong with moving your OS to another platform as long as you're not, doing it redundantly, as it were.
Well, yeah, I haven't done that myself, but I've heard stories where you have to, call up Microsoft and explain what you're doing or something and beg for their permission.
No, I've not had that problem, but yeah, I can imagine you might. You're just stepping into the wrong thing, as it were.
All right, Gordon, I won't hold you up any longer. It's time to go get yourself some sleep, it sounds like. W2TTT from WTJC.
Yeah, well, that's something I probably should do, but I've got a few things to do before I do that. So I understand, but I've got much to do. Anyway, Jim, you take care. Godspeed. Jeremy's out playing a hockey game that was... We got called to play a Division II game for a team that was short, and he's now taking care of that. And then Nancy went with him, and John went with him, and two of John's friends drove down to watch him. And I wanted to go, but I'm stuck here, not just with the Nets, I got other things I have to do, so it is what it is. Anyway, you take care and Godspeed. Thanks. W2JC, W2TTT. I'm going to go mobile in a couple of minutes just to stretch my legs and such. W2TTT.
W2TTT, AC2GI.
AC2GI, go ahead, W2TTT.
This is Rich again. I'm in the process of installing N1MMM, and I'm filling out the station identification or station information, and it keeps erroring out because I left the AWS section blank. Do you know what goes in there?
Where do you live? You live in New Jersey, right? So NNJ would be good.
NNJ for Northern New Jersey. Got it.
Yes, sir.
All right, I took it. Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you again on Sunday night. EC2TI, I'll be clear.
Okie doke. Very, very good. EC2TI, I'm glad we were able to help W2TTT.
Thank you.